We're going to take some phone calls and continue talking with Wes Germer about his incredible sighting that changed his whole life. We'll talk about some of the things he's been doing now with his organization, Sasquatch Chronicles. Wes Germer back with us. Wes, so what have you concluded about what people might be seeing, these creatures?
Well, do you mean what do I think these creatures are?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the question everyone wants to know. And obviously, I don't have one in my garage that I'm studying, but what I can tell you is from what I saw and what people describe from their behavior, I think what I've concluded to this point is we're dealing with some sort of primate. What I saw was very primate-like, very... I don't think these are forest brothers out there running around. I truly believe this is a wild animal out there. But what I've concluded is we're dealing with some sort of primate. And I come to that conclusion based on what I personally have seen and then, you know, through thousands of accounts that I've talked to from people, what they describe from their behaviors. These things throw rocks, they break branches, they growl, they scream and yell. It's somewhere between, and I've said this before, but it's somewhere between like a chimp and an ape. They're very primate-like in their behavior. This isn't a dumb ape running around there or running around out in the woods, but I would say it's very primate-like, unknown primate at this point, but that would be my best assessment based on the information that I have.
You have come across a lot of researchers since you've been doing this over the last couple of years. Tell me about the researcher in Texas. Bob Garrett, is it?
Yeah, Bob Garrett's kind of an interesting case. Bob is nothing short of a war hero for our country, and he served this country well. And after he got out of the military, he took to gold mining and just basically to get out in the woods to clear his head off of what he had seen in the war. And Bob came across these creatures several times and wasn't sure what to make of it. And all the miners talked about seeing these things. And Bob had come across them. And when he had moved to Texas, Bob decided, hey, I'm going to start... he was a tracker in the military. He had, you know, he has a lot of different special skills. So he really started going in and looking into trying to track these animals down. And while he was down there in Texas, one of the cases that's interesting about Bob Garrett is he had come across a torn-up camp. Now, the torn-up, and he describes it as a torn-up camp, and he put this on YouTube. And what he had put up on YouTube is very interesting. When you watch the video he had put of this torn-up camp, you'll see it looks like King Kong went through there and destroyed the area. There's trees that are 12 feet up that are snapped down in half. There was blood. There was, it looked like World War III had taken place in this area. And as he was filming this torn-up camp, one thing in the film, as you watch it, there's 18-inch, what appear to be 18-inch human-like footprints all over this camp. The other thing that's interesting as you watch this video, it looks like someone stood and fired a gun off 365 degrees, almost like they were trying to protect themselves from an attack that was coming in all around them, and their shells almost in a circular pattern from where someone looks like they were trying to protect themselves. And what's interesting is when Bob had pulled up to this torn-up camp, this wasn't the first one that he'd come across, but this one was unique because it didn't look like someone was out there drinking. It didn't appear to be, you know, the cartel. It looked like these guys were attacked for, I guess, lack of a better term than Sasquatch. And in this area is an area that he calls as a corridor that they travel back and forth between the Sam Houston and, I guess, what Texans call like the Big Sandy area out there. So Bob calls 911 when he comes across this, and he films a little bit more, and I didn't find this information out from Bob, but Bob had filmed a little bit more, and there's a little bit more to the story. But what Bob had filmed, he called 911 and told them, hey, look, it looks like bodies that were being dragged off, and he had filmed where it looked like bodies were being dragged off, and it took 16 hours for someone to respond to come out to the site. So Bob films the whole thing, goes home, comes back the next day, and decides, okay, someone's been here. I'm going to film this again. And what he filmed on the next day, what looks like someone dumping sand, covering the tracks, and it looked like someone was driving back and forth with a vehicle covering up tracks in this area.
That's weird.
There wasn't any sort of assistance that was brought out. And, you know, no cops showed up, no ambulance showed up. And so he had filmed this. And that's kind of the end of the story with Bob. He doesn't really say a whole lot more of what happened after that point. I had a government insider contact me, and I'm real careful on some of these guys because you never know who you're talking to and what information they're giving you. So this guy starts telling me the story about what happened down there with Bob Garrett and starts explaining to me the whole story of what, and he says, well, you need to look into this. You've had a lot of police officers on the show. You've had judges. You've had doctors. You know, I think if anyone's going to look into this, you guys need to look into this. And I'm listening to the story he's telling, and I'm like, okay, well, we'll see. And he goes, Wes, I'll tell you this if you're not believing what I'm telling you. Bob Garrett was at this location last Saturday night. There was three shots fired off in his direction, and his team left at 2 a.m. And he goes, if you think I'm lying, call him and ask him. And this guy's not technically a government insider. He has access to encrypted emails that were basically, it's the Department of Interior was in Washington State was talking to its counterpart down in Texas. And he says, if you think I'm lying to you, call Bob and ask him. So I call Bob and ask him. I said, hey, were you at this location last Saturday night? And there was a 30-second, you know, he just sits there, he doesn't know what to say, and he goes, how did you know that? And I said, was someone firing off rounds in your general direction that night? And he says, how did you know that? I said, did you guys leave about 2 o'clock in the morning after those rounds were being fired off in your general direction? And he says, yeah. He goes, you're freaking me out. I don't know how you know this information. And so the story that this insider starts telling me about what happened with Bob Garrett, the story goes, in this particular area, and listeners out there can look this up, there's a lot of people that go missing in Texas. Look up the missing Texas.
Oh, border. Yeah, I've had David Politis on, Wes, who has written a book about people just simply disappearing. And that's one theory that's come up, that maybe these creatures are grabbing people in the woods.
Well, I can tell you from the emails that were shared with me, the encrypted emails from the Department of Interior, exactly what's going on. And not always, I don't want to say, it always happens, but it does happen a lot. And in these emails, it was almost a complete disregard for the people that died in this case. There was 2 people that died. What the insider was sharing with me was one of the bodies had been decapitated. Not its head, not the head was cut off, the head was popped off. The insider shared with me that one of the bodies was half eaten and thrown up in a tree. And he said, but there was a survivor that night. That someone had survived that night. And I was able to confirm a lot of what he was telling me. And what had happened is there was the survivor that got away that night, he ended up in the hospital. And he was in shock. And when he was in the hospital, the only thing this guy would mutter is monsters, 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 and that's all he. And he
Wow.
was in shock. And the Department of the Interior, in these emails that were going back and forth, they're talking about this guy, and they're talking about Bob Garrett. And it's a long. These aren't normal email. You know, this is all encrypted emails that they're talking back and forth. And what they were saying was, well, let's nail this guy with the murder. The counterpart down in Texas comes back and says, there's a problem with that. He's now in the hospital in shock, and all this idiot, and that's the term they use, all this idiot will mutter is monster, monster, monster. So it's going to be hard to nail this guy with murder. He might end up talking. So then they turn their attention to Bob Garrett because he had put the video up on YouTube.
Yeah.
What they were going to do was they were going to nail Bob Garrett with messing up their crime scene, impending investigation. I mean,
tampering with evidence, all that stuff.
Tampering with evidence. I mean, a long list. And they were going to basically throw him in prison and throw away the key. Bob was smart enough to get an attorney. And this isn't information that Bob shared with me until after I was able to. I mean, this is all coming from the insider. There was an email chain going back and forth between the Department of the Interior and Bob Garrett's attorney. Bob Garrett's attorney was saying, you can't put Bob in prison because of the Good Samaritan Act of like 1970-something, and he was trying to render aid and on, and they were saying, well, we don't care. And his attorney, the turning point in the conversation, his attorney, responded back to whoever this was at this federal level and said, if you try to put this guy in prison, I promise you I will turn this into a circus. I will make this into a public circus, and the truth will come out. Then they backed off. Coincidentally, Bob Garrett's YouTube channel went down and all this other stuff, but they backed off. There was no more investigation of them.
Why does it seem, Wes, though, that everybody who has some of these encounters, including many of people who've called into your Sasquatch Chronicles show, that they aren't very good? I mean, I've never heard of a friendly Bigfoot story yet. Have you?
Well, I think the thing with Sasquatch, to be honest with you, George, is you're dealing with a wild animal. I'm sure you've heard the telepathy stories. I'm sure you've heard the cloaking.
Yes.
And all of that's nonsense, as far as I'm concerned. You're dealing with a wild animal, and a lot of the encounters, and I've talked to many police officers, I've talked to many hunters, I've talked to many, you'll find that these encounters really aren't happy encounters. There is situations to where you'll even have a lot of what I call flute players or hippies that like to feed these things, and then all of a sudden they stop feeding them, and these things seem to turn on them. You're dealing with a wild animal, and so I don't think you're ever really going to have a happy encounter when you're dealing. And don't get me wrong, this isn't a dumb animal by any means. It's a very intelligent animal, but it's still a wild animal in the same breath. And that's why you don't see a lot of happy encounters. That's why you don't have people coming forward and saying, hey, I went out and held hands with this thing. The real encounters, when you get down to the brass tacks of the real encounters, like with hunters, and I could go on and on with stories if you want to hear stories all night, but the same theme you'll have with all these stories is at the end of the day, you're dealing with a wild animal. And at the end of the day, a very elusive wild animal, and it's never going to turn out good when you're dealing with a wild animal.
No, it's not. And you see a lot of people, though, as you mentioned, think of this creature as extraterrestrial, dimensional, something like that, giving it some kind of personality and emotion. And I don't think it has any of that.
Yeah, I think that, you know, like with the UFO thing, I was talking to a gentleman the other day who's a paranormal investigator, and I think actually has legitimate Sasquatch activity on this property. And he also talks about UFO activity on this property, which there's no reason for me to not believe this guy. I think there is actual UFO activity going on this property. And then he starts mixing the two. Well, Sasquatch must be an alien because I'm seeing this and this. Therefore, 2 + 2 = 5. Instead of saying, well, maybe there's something going on here with Sasquatch, and then maybe there's a legitimate UFO. I think people try too hard to paint the picture on separate phenomena that's going on. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do. Let's take a few calls here for you, then we'll wrap things up after the break with final phone calls. We go to John in Oklahoma City, first-time caller. John, thanks for calling. You're on the air with us.
Hey, George, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, John. Thank you.
Listen, I used to do a little bit of logging when I got out of the military in 75. And I was in between, I was up around Centralia in Chehalis area, up there in Washington. And a buddy of mine, what we were doing was we were logging for cedar posts. And he left me up there in an 18-foot trailer. And I happened to have a campfire one evening, and I heard some big giant footsteps in the bush line, kind of. And I mean, you know, there's small logs, like about 8-10 inches in diameter, and these things were snapping as they were walking over them. And a couple of them came into the outskirts of my fire and everything to where I can see them standing. One was about 8 foot tall, and the other one was about 9.5 feet tall.
Jeez.
I happened to stand 6.5 feet tall my own self. I was in the Marine Corps for 6 years, thought I was Billy Badass. And I'll tell you what, the hairs on the back of my neck just stood up. I didn't know what to do, you know, because, and then the next thing I seen, there was like three smaller ones.
Like like children, babies.
Yeah. You know, they were like from 4 foot up to about 6 foot tall.
Did they demonstrate, Wes, any animosity, any evilness,
no,
meanness?
No, because the thing was, I had a campfire going, and I was cooking up some trout, and
that's what they wanted.
Yeah, I had some trout laying on some tree stumps and everything, because there are tree stumps all over the place. I mean, I was living in a kind of like a slash area, and they happened to walk. The biggest one happened to walk up to the big tree stump that I had about a half a dozen trout laying on there, and they took it. He took it, turned around, and walked off.
Well, that's what they wanted. We'll be walking off, but just for a moment. Well, next hour we're going to put our little toes into the occult. That's right. We're going to do a little tippy toe there with our special guest. So make sure you're part of that. And when we come back with Wes Germer, we'll take some final phone calls here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Wes Germer with us. Your phone calls, of course. So let's go right back to the calls. We've got Chip in Maryland. Welcome to the program, Chip. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi, George. How are you?
Good.
Hey, listen, I have a belief that there are two types of these. I think the Out West type. You know, the film that
the Patterson,
everybody knows,
yeah,
Patterson footage, that is of a more guerrilla type, more you know, it's a very guerrilla type animal.
Mm-hmm. Maybe what Wes saw.
Well, when I saw one in Maryland, me and two of my children, it was like dusk. But it was a rainy day, and he was, like, pushed up against trees, like he was hiding when it was raining. And he was going to, you know, I guess he was going to run across the highway when it cleared up. But he had a man's face, a man's profile, but he was huge, you know? And I think there's difference in their footprints. There's the ones out west that have that where half of their foot like bends weird when mm-hmm. they walk, and then there are other footprints that are more like a man. And I really think that. I think that there's two different types of these things.
All right, let's get one of the experts' thoughts on this. Wes, what about the possibility that there are two different types of these creatures?
Well, I'm far from an expert, but Chip is right. We actually talked with a military insider, and that's we can save that for another show, but that's one of the things my co-host Will Jevening and I used to disagree on. We'd have people that would come on the show and say, well, looked very human. The face looked very human. And we saw what we found is out towards the East Coast, a lot of people were saying that it looked very human. Down south, they're seeing something a little bit different. They're seeing it's a different description, and then it's different from what we have up here in the Pacific Northwest. And one of the insiders that we talked to said there's actually four different types. And the military's, they've sent in kill teams and everything else, but he described to us these four different types that are out there. So Chip is right when he says, hey, what I saw is very human-like, because what I saw wasn't, I would describe, very human-like at all. And so there are these different four different types. One of the types a lot of people describe, I'll give you an example, is what people are calling the dog man. And what we found about the dog man is it kind of has like a snout, like a baboon. And one of the insiders was saying was you'll find that particular type. It's more rare, but it's usually 500 miles east or west of the Mississippi River drainage system. Out where Chip's talking about, he's right. They do describe them as being more human-like. They're hair-covered. They're larger than a person. But when people describe the face, they're describing it kind of looked human. And I've heard the term, too, Down syndrome. And forgive me for any parents out there that have Down syndrome kids. I don't mean to be disrespectful.
No, I understand.
But a lot of what people will say out on the East Coast and areas in the South is it looked almost like it had Down syndrome. It looked human, but it was a little bit different than it wasn't human, but it looked human in the face.
These creatures in the Himalayas that they call the abominable snowman seem to be white, yet the ones here have brown hair. What's the difference here? What's going on?
Well, I think with color, I don't think that color really has much to do. We have a lot of reports of the Yeti, and you'd be surprised. A lot of times people will say it's white, but I've had a lot of reports where people say it was black. It was a dark brown, and what they'll describe to me is what they're describing as the Yeti. Here in the United States, you'll have descriptions from everything. I would say reddish brown is probably the most common, but you'll have black. You'll have people talk about white ones or light gray ones. I don't think color has really anything to do with the species as themselves. I think as an image in our head, we think of the Yeti. We think of this huge white abominable snowman monster, but it's interesting when you talk to people in that region, they'll describe different colors, like almost like we do here in the United States. People will describe kind of a reddish brown, they'll describe a black, they'll describe a light gray. So I mean, I think what we have is an image of the Yeti. I think it's been commercialized, and so we think automatically a white huge monster. But if you talk to people in that region, white, you know, there's other colors besides people are just seeing white.
What about the cone-shaped head that so many people see?
Well, I think, again, that goes back to the different types. Here in the Pacific Northwest, what I saw had what I describe as kind of a cone-shaped head. It kind of came to kind of what you'd see with a gorilla. But out there in the East Coast where Chip's from, or down south, it's less common for them to say it had a cone-shaped head. Most people will say it had a big head, it had a rounded head. And I think it goes back to the different type. Now, when I say different type, what I mean by that is I still think we're talking about the same animal, but in the same animal, if someone describes to you a gorilla, and then someone says, well, that's not what I saw. What I saw was, and they're describing a chimpanzee, you're still talking about the same general family, but two separate species. A chimp and an ape are two different species. They're in the same family, but, and that's what you'll find with these different types. And what's interesting is when you talk to people on the East Coast, you talk to people down south, you talk to people in the Pacific Northwest, you kind of get a general idea of what's in that area based on what people are describing.
Next up, we go to DJ in Seattle, Washington. Hey, DJ, thanks for calling. Go ahead. DJ?
Hello?
Yes, sir. Take it away.
Okay, so it was 1989. It was June. Thank you, George, for having me.
Sure thing.
And, well, I was hiking and my senior year in high school, 17 years old, and up the trail, what I saw was a giant figure that was out of focus. It was a blur. It was the cloaking phenomena. And it went behind a big tree up the trail. So I'm going up the trail, but it made me forget what I saw. And as I'm passing that tree, I hear a crash over yonder to my right. I look over. About 50 feet away, there's a tree swaying left and right, and a big rock, bigger than my head, hits the ground. And I'm wondering, well, what threw a big-ass rock? So I take a couple more steps, and then behind me, now to my left, I hear, whoop! And I didn't know what it was, so I whipped back. I made the same sound. And fear came over me, this terror came over me. I could tell it was huge. It was looking down at me. The hairs on my arms and neck stood up. And after about 3 minutes of standing kind of still and probably probing me, I don't know, telepathically probably, but anyway, so it broke a huge branch on the tree, and then it literally stomped past me up the trail. And I was so scared, I just turned and ran out of there.
Well, that was probably the smart thing that you could do. Wes, it just seems that so many people are seeing these creatures all over the place.
Yeah, it is. And it's interesting, too, when we talk to, I would say some of the most interesting encounters come from hunters. But what's interesting is the police officers that have come forward and I've talked about seeing these things. And, you know, I had a SWAT team that almost hit one on a road. And, you know, the SWAT team described to me, hey, Wes, it wasn't a bear, it wasn't a man, but here's kind of what we saw. What do you think it was? And what they're describing to me is a Sasquatch. I think more people see them than come forward. I think a lot, I would say for every one person that actually comes forward, I know in the past people said for every one person that comes forward, there's 10 people that don't. I think it's more like for one person that comes forward, there's 50 that don't. I had an interesting case of a police officer that got called out to a boy that had been ripped off a bike by what he described as a gorilla. And his parents had called 911. They went out there, and the cops showed up, and the boy's describing to them what yanked him off his bike. And he says, I think it was a big gorilla. I think a huge gorilla ripped me off my bike. And this is down in Texas. And they go out to, they said, take us back out to this area where this boy had been ripped off his bike. And what he was saying is he was going down the road, and he said, this gorilla came out of the brush, charged him. He tried to ride away. He couldn't. It grabbed the back of his bike. He went flying over the handlebars, and he said he got up and he just ran back to his house and called and told his parents. They called the cops. Well, when the cops went back out there, this boy's bike had been bent in half. The frame had been physically bent in half and thrown up in a tree, about 12, 13 feet up in this tree. And the kid's terrified to this day, but they were just, one of the officers was 6'4". And he said, tell me how much bigger it was than me. And he said, it was about twice your height, but I think it was a gorilla. So, I mean, there's all of these stories that people share that are starting to come forward now. And I think with less of the muddying of the waters with this topic, people who have legitimate encounters come forward and say, hey, I saw this, and I'm not sure what to make of it. I think more and more people will come forward, and hopefully this will eventually get solved in our lifetime. But
it should.
Yeah, it should. It really should.
The calls keep rolling in. Let's go to Alaska. We have Jim in Hyder, Alaska. Go ahead, Jim. Thank you for calling.
Oh, hi, Captain Jim, actually.
All right, Captain Jim.
And how that pertains is I single-hand my boat from Hyder over to Ketchikan. This happened a couple of years ago, but since then I keep the boat in Hyder on a trailer. But anyways, on a trip over to Ketch, I make it down to Halibut Bay, and that's about 70 miles down the Portland Canal. And that's my first night usually. And I'm anchored up in 60 feet of water, and nice night, and the stars are out. And, you know, I've been up here 25, 30 years, and you know, girls like me, they like sitting next to me because they feel my heart and my soul, you know, so I can, you know, they just melt, you know.
You're the real deal.
Yeah. And so I experienced this with bears around my cabin there, too. But, you know, I tickle the black bears when they come around, and brown bears, they just kind of, you know, look at me and they go away, kind of, but they come back. So anyways, I'm laying in my bunk, looking up through the companionway at the stars. I already had my power nap and dinner, and boats just swaying back and forth a little bit. A little bit of a breeze enough to keep the anchor line taut. And I hear this, oh! And I'm really like I said, I know what bears sound like and every other animal that lives there.
This was no bear, was it?
This was no bear. And, you know, it was like it wasn't an aggressive growl. It was kind of like a hello or... I know you're out there, or welcome, you're back, you know, because I go in the same spot. I did it for about 3 years, 4 years in a row, and so maybe it became accustomed to me being there. And, you know, I have seals that follow me around there, too, and eagles that land on my mast, and they're comfortable with my boat, you know,
yeah.
And myself.
Well, you've got that ability to... calm the spirit, I would guess. We're almost out of time here, Wes. I do want to take a few seconds here for you to tell everybody about your Sasquatch Chronicles and how they can listen to you.
Yeah, I appreciate it, George. People can go to SasquatchChronicles.com. All of our contact information is on there for all the hosts. You guys, if you have encounters and you want to share them, please contact us. You can listen to us on iTunes, you can listen to us on Stitcher, most podcast players, or if you want, you can listen to us right there on SasquatchChronicles.com on our website. And I hope people enjoy it. I hope people, we put a lot of work into the show, and I'm sure as you know, George, and you know, we hope people enjoy the stories and get a chance to hear encounters.
And... let's take one more call here. Chuck in Indianapolis. It's your turn, Chuck. We'll squeeze you in. Go ahead.
All right. Long-time listener.
Thank you.
Yeah, it was when Madman Markham was coming on.
Oh, that's a long time ago.
You bet. And anyhow, I used to dredge for gold in North Fork, South Fork of the Stanislaus River in Northern California. And... I did it for maybe 30 years there, and And he used to smell, I don't know if Wes ever encountered an odor, I mean an obscene odor, and when I would be dredging down there and resting, I could smell that, and it was terrible. And I wanted to know where it was coming from, and I got to walking around, and there was a mesa of a large, large rock, maybe 60 foot above our head on the other side of the river, which wasn't very large. And I went up there one time, and there's defecation, and it was a pile, looked like a horse size. You know, they were big.
I would guess so.
But that wasn't the smell I smelled. It was a different, it stunk. And every so often we'd come down, and our line shack was about 6 foot by 8. I know the size because that was the size of a sheet of plywood that we made them out of. And it would be turned over or destructed, and our equipment thrown all over the place. And this is a remote area there. It took us a good 40 minutes to get down there and then back up, you know. And every day that we dredged. But it was the most god-awful smell I never...
Well, you know, we hear a lot of stories about the horrible odor of these creatures because they're animals. Wes, thanks for being on the program. Great stories. Just truly amazing. When we come back, we'll talk about the occult on Coast to Coast AM.